Hey everybody, just a quick word before we start this week's episode. We are now the proud sponsors of Timber Outdoor Music Festival. It's a brand new music festival presented by Artist Home, co-creators of Dough Bay Fest. It's going to be good. Timber attendees will enjoy the likes of the Helio Sequence, Fruit Bats, Quasi, Noah Gunderson, Brian John Appleby, Lamolo, and many more. Many who have been on this very show. And it's going to be so much fun, guys. It's going to be 2 days and nights of camping, outdoors, and music in Carnation, Washington. Timber is going to take place July 26th and 27th. You can find out more at timbermusicfest.com. Enjoy the episode. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. Oh, this is episode 156, what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Indeed. Oh, man, we've got a great show planned for you this week. Oh, such a great guy. Rob Benson stops by to chat with us about his life, about his musical exploits, being friends with a lot of the bands in Seattle in the early 90s, including John Roderick and the Western State Hurricanes, and Lane Staley of course, Alice in Chains. Just kind of talking about how he got started in music and all that good stuff. And we're going to be featuring music from Rob Benson and his new project, side project. I don't know what you would call it because he's got so many projects. It's called Rob Benson and the Shelk. They've got a new album out. Well, he's got a new album out. And it's really, really good. Yeah, we'll be talking with him shortly. It's great chat, great chat. Super dude. And the music is, oh God, it's so good. It's so good, you guys. Kind of a cross between like Beatles and They Might Be Giants. It's awesome. It's so awesome. I hate putting labels on things. But those are the two artists that came to mind instantly when I first heard this. Rob sent this to me a little bit ago before it came out, and it's really good. And we finally had a chance to have him on. Of course, you've probably heard him on like TBTL and Sean DeTore's mixtape and all that good stuff. But now we've got him on the Air Raid Podcast, right? Yes, good things. Hey, if it sounds weird, if it sounds echoey, like more than normal, in your earbuds or however you're listening to this, it's because we've been moving out. That's right. This is the final episode that will be held here in Dining Room Studios. The final one. We've sold the home, the Roden household. We've sold it, and we're moving out. I'll be living with my grandparents for the next couple weeks in Edmonds, Washington, which should be fun. Oh, my grandparents are great. They're putting us up for a couple weeks. We put in an offer on a new house here in Seattle, and we've got to wait until all that goes through. And then once we move in there, people, we've got a full-fledged studio waiting for us at that house, and it's going to be so good. I haven't decided what to call the studio yet. Maybe Roden Studios. Maybe backyard studios because it's a big studio in the backyard. I don't know. What do I call it? What do we call it? Garage studios because it's attached to the garage. I can't use that, right? Mark Maron's got that on lock. What do I do? Hey, you know what? Here's a deal. Why don't you guys, the listeners, start sending me your suggestions for what we call the studio? That'd be a fun thing, right? Yeah. How about we do a prize for whoever wins for the winning studio name? That would be fantastic, right? Yeah, let's do that. prize for the winning name. We will send you a T-shirt and a poster, free of charge, to the winning name of the new Air Raid Studio. How's that? Right? Maybe maybe the winning one will just be Air Raid Studios. Who knows? I have no idea. But we'll send you a T-shirt, we'll send you a poster, and we'll get you all set up. So send your your suggestions into Aaron. That's two A's, A-A-R-O-N, at air-raid.net, and we'll do that up. Hey, and by the way, we got an email from a listener named Jill. Listener Jill asked where she could find all the back archived episodes so that she can download them to her iPod. Now, here's the thing. I don't know if you can actually download it to your iPod unless you have... I don't have an Apple product. I've got an iPad. I guess I could have looked this up. That would have been a good idea, right? Boy, ill prepared as normal. She was asking how she could get all the rest of the episodes and download them to her iPod. Well, here's the deal. You can go to air-raid.net. Let's see. Sign on to the website there. Actually, you don't need to sign on. It's free. You can find all the archived episodes with Bob Saget, with Macklemore, with Mudhoney, with John Roderick, with Dave Bazan, all those guys, members of Band of Horses. You can find all that. Pete Holmes, Moshe Kasher, Hari Kondabolu, all sorts of stuff. I'm running a blank. We've done 156 of these episodes, people. I can't remember all of them. Dana Gould, there's one. There's a good name. Man, that was a fun episode. That was such a fun episode. Dana Gould is a fantastic standout dude. You can find them all at the archives page at air-raid.net. Whoa. I just had to burp. Because I'm drinking Bud Light. Because it's hot. And I've been moving stuff all weekend, dudes and ladies. So go there. Or you can stream them from the website. You can also sign on to our RSS feed and put that into your favorite podcatcher and download them all that way. Because we know all the episodes are not available on iTunes. Just the latest, the most recent 20 episodes is available on iTunes. You can find them all at our website and download them from our RSS feed. So that's how you do that. Right? That's how you do that. Or you can sign on to CairoRadio.com and download that nifty app and do it that way as well. I think they're all on there. Oh, God, I hope they are. Anyway, let's get down to it too. Huh? We've got a couple things to plug here before we get started. Let's do this. We're having a big podcast bash, just like we did last year with the sibling rivalry, Stack of Dimes, Grapes of Rad, Sean DeTore's mixtape, the MacGuffin podcast, big listener get together and podcast party at, Naked City Brewery there on Greenwood Avenue in my hood. And it's going to be a lot of fun. We had a great time last year, did some jello shots across the street and some sort of weird jello, like, syringe shots, which were a little much, but it's going to take place August 3rd. At 5 p.m., and they've got this great new Naked City Brewery just built this big, like, outdoor space, and if it's hot, we can all be outside. If it's raining, we can all be inside, and it's just going to be a lot of fun. So do that. Come and be merry with us, will ya? August 3rd, 5 p.m. at Naked City Brewery and Tap House. You can see and meet all of your favorite podcasters. Podcast hosts and all that nonsense, right? Like we're some kind of famous people. I don't know. Anyway, hey, so last week, I think this was last week. Yeah, it was close to it anyway. July 4th weekend, we went up to, I know I talked about this last week, but July 4th weekend, we went up to my grandparents' lake cabin, right? Situated near the town of Granite Falls. And we took Tatum, my daughter, into the town to go play at the park for a little bit and stuff, and we went and grabbed some pizza. While we were at this pizza place, man, Granite Falls is weird, guys. And no offense to anybody who lives there, but Granite Falls is weird, okay? So we get in there. We order our pizza. The woman comes to the table, and she is crying. My wife, Mairead, says, "Hey, how are you doing? You okay?" She goes, "No, I'm having a terrible day. My fiance has just been airlifted to Harborview because of a really bad accident." Instantly, we're like, "Oh, that's not good. That's not good." And so I say, "Well, maybe we should just go." She says, "No. You don't do that. Please stay." Like, okay, well, maybe you should go. "Oh, no, I can't. They wouldn't let me." What? Your fiance was just airlifted, if this is a true story, airlifted to a hospital, a really, like, an intense hospital, right? Like an emergency hospital in Seattle. Why can't you just go? Why can't you close up shop? There was like two people. We were like two of four people in there. It's ridiculous, right? And then I started to think that maybe she was just fishing for a really good, like, tip or something like that. I don't know, which we eventually gave to her anyway. Then we're walking, so that was weird. Why wouldn't you fucking leave the store? Just close up the store, tell everybody you gotta go, there's an emergency. Everybody would understand that. Even the people who own the place, right? God, you'd like to think so, anyway. Anyway, we leave that. We have great pizza. It was great, wonderful pizza. It was wonderful pizza at Omega Pizza in Granite Falls. Fucking great, man. It's like some of the best pizza I've ever had. Anyway, we leave that place. We're walking down the street, and there's this guy with a blindfold on, riding his bike, mumbling to himself. Blindfold on, guys, and he's riding on the sidewalk. He almost hits me and my daughter. And I'm like, whoa. I mean, that was super close. He's going super fast. He's got a fucking blindfold on. And then he just disappears. He just appears in this, like, back alley. And so, yeah, that was weird, right? Granite Falls. What the hell's going on there? And we're walking a little bit more. All of a sudden, we see these, like, group of firefighters run across the street with, like, five different, like, what do you call it? Fire extinguishers. Run across the street from the fire station over to this bank, and they put out a small smoldering thing in the ashtray, in the covered ashtray. It was just smoldering in there from somebody's cigarette. Five firefighters run across the street to put out a cigarette fire. Granite Falls, man. Weird stuff. Then, yeah, there's more. There's more people. We get to the park, we're playing at the park, and all of a sudden we see the guy that almost hit us with the bicycle and the blindfold on, and he crashes across the street from the park. And he's just laying there, screaming in pain, holding his arm, just screaming. And Mairead's like, "Should we go over there and see if he's okay?" And I was like, "No, that guy is obviously on something, and we are not getting close to him, right?" Oh my God, Granite Falls. And then he stood up after, like, I don't know, maybe like 15 minutes of just like laying and writhing on the ground. I don't know if he like broke something or whatever. He just gets on his bike and he takes off without his blindfold. He lost it. He lost it somewhere in the crash. Jesus. Holy Jesus. Man. I wish I had a video camera with me. I guess I have my phone. I could have taken video of that. Oh, that's some weird shit, guys. Anyway. Strange things happening over in Granite Falls. Okay, I've hung on long enough, right? Okay, let's get to it, shall we? But before we do, remember, go to iTunes and rate and review the show. It really does help. It'll only take you a couple seconds. And it continues to, it helps us out to continue to get great guests like Rob Benson on the show, and John Roderick and Dave Bazan and all those guys. They all look at that stuff. Their publicists look at that stuff, and they take stock in it, right? Helps tell them that this is a real thing and that they should come and do it. Okay, That's it. That's it. All right. This song is called Cars of Neverland Shake off of the new album from Rob Benson and the Shelk, entitled Cursive Falls from the Sky. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us, everybody.
Shattered light will be all right. For the cars of Neverland shake you when you hold out your hand. There is no journey to instead save the one you've fallen in. Treasure dies like joyous eyes, and here we'll imagine to survive. Lurking is the beast that does slither up the trees and steals the eggs. He does not whisper, does not scream. He runs like tears up your drain. A solemn is the setting sun, for it does not hurt. Save the one. No telling the sea.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's really crazy. I mean, my wife and I are about to be empty nesters. I mean,
that's got to be kind of a good feeling, though, right?
Oh, it's a great feeling.
So you must have had Wait, okay. So how you're 41?
Yeah.
How old were you when? Let's see. I can't do the math.
Math? I don't. Do I want to do that? I was expecting you to do it for
me. Can we put it on pause and then
yeah,
and then
yeah, I think we should.
And then do the math really quick.
In my 20s.
Okay.
I wasn't that young. Like, people always look at me like, oh my god.
Well, see,
you,
that's
like,
what I was thinking, because we're friends on Facebook, yeah. and I saw one of your posts about your kid graduating high school, and I was like, whoa, dude, he must have been like a teen father.
Yeah, and I, you know, Luke Burbank and I have talked about this before, and I think he thought I was his age, and so he thought the same thing.
Right, right.
And so he's always like, yeah, you know, we've gone through the same stuff, and he didn't know that I was a few years older than he is. So.
Oh my god! But is that like a good feeling? Are you like,
no,
are you
I'm
pretty stoked about like the empty nest kind of thing?
I mean, I want her to, you know, find her way and do the best she can. But I have really given the family my as much attention as I could through the last 18 years, and I feel like now I can really focus on the music more than I ever have before.
Right. So, yeah.
Because there's been times where that's, you know, things were not possible because family came first, you know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course. So. Yeah, it's the same thing with what I do here.
Yeah, exactly.
As well. You know, you can only devote so many hours
to
what you do.
Right.
Especially now, by the way, this is going to be the final Air Raid episode from Dining Room Studios.
I'm pretty honored to have the last one
yeah,
one
yeah,
right here.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So if you hear those listening at home, if you hear like a loud echoey kind of noises coming, that's because everything is gone. Like, pretty much, you know.
It's pretty empty right now.
Yeah. All the furniture is out of here, all the pictures off the walls. So there's no like noise deadening that's happening in here.
Truth.
But we're moving into a new place. We got a full studio.
Yeah.
That's gonna be reintroduced into the air raid world. So that's a big thing.
That's a huge step.
Yeah. Rob Benson.
Hey.
Welcome to the show, man.
It's good to see you. Yeah. Good to hang with you, Aaron.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, it's good to finally have you on. This new album that you've got under a new kind of, I don't know, this is what, a solo project, right?
Yeah, there's a lot involved in it. It's a solo project, but I would like to turn it into something, a band of some sort.
Okay, and that would be The Shelk.
Yes.
Rob Benson That's and The Shelk.
Why I added that part to the end, just because in the past when I've put out solo records, I've just been Rob Benson and whatever, you know.
Because eventually you will have a band.
I think so. You know, I mean, I do have several bands already, as if I needed more.
Right.
But I can't help myself. I think there was some review that said that this guy's got like a million projects. What is he like? You know, he just like can't sit still, has to always keep it. But that, you know, most of the projects are projects that started and then other people involved in them went other directions and did their things. And I guess can't do that anymore. Yeah, so, yeah. You know.
Well, the album is called Curse of Falls from the Sky, and mm-hmm. it's out now, correct?
Yes.
Have you had a CD release?
That was last night.
Yeah. Oh, really? Nice.
High Dive.
Okay, yeah. Okay. It was awesome. Shoot, man. Sorry I couldn't be there.
That's okay. You know, it was one of those things, too, because we booked it way in advance. You do shows And we got to it. It was a few weeks before we started realizing there was everything in the world happening on that night. So
Sub Pop Silver Jubilee was happening
yesterday.
Can't
compete with that, you know.
There's like a ton of comedians in town as well.
Exactly. Ballard Seafood Fest. Seattle Summer Fest. There's all these free things all over the place. Yeah. And so I think we had a fair amount of people that did the both, but they came in all red-faced and just a long day. And they're still troopers. They're going to make it out. And then we had a lot of friends that couldn't hack both.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. Well, I was here. I didn't get to enjoy any of the free stuff going on yesterday. I was here boxing up, life memories.
It's your current job.
That's
boxing
right, man.
Things.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. I'm so. See, we're moving into a place too that doesn't have any stairs. This was hell.
The stairs were nice though, because I mean, I felt like just walking up here, I got my daily workout. That was several flights of stairs. Pretty good.
Yeah, dude. Well, welcome, man. Welcome to Dining Room Studios, or what's left of it anyway.
Yes, yeah.
Like I said before, it's good to have you. Good to finally have you on. We've got a bunch of mutual friends. We've had, a couple of, the guys from, let's see, what was it?
The Great Um.
Yep.
Yeah,
here,
I played
who
drums
you played
in that
drums
band, so
for?
Yeah. Yes.
Jake and Caleb.
Yeah, and here. they both say hello. By the way.
Oh, good.
Yeah, they send their love.
Well, say hello to them. For
I sure
me,
will.
Will
I
you?
Will. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh man, but this. I want to get back to the family thing real quick.
Yeah.
So Empty Nest. Is your daughter going to college?
Yeah. She's starting just community college, like Shoreline up the street. But,
great. So she'll be kind of in the area.
She's definitely not going to be gone. She'll be around. But it's just, you know.
Is she going to move out? She is going to move out.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the goal on her side of things.
Is it a goal for you?
Yeah, for sure. we're trying to encourage in every way we can. But it's that whole saving money to get thing.
Oh, totally.
And she has some, but she wants a little more of a cushion. I think that's smart.
Yeah, totally.
And she has a really close buddy of hers that they are looking to get a small apartment together. So that's cool.
Yeah.
I think it'll work out. I think it'll work out for them. And then, you know, for me, it's more about like, because in the past I've been sort of the, you know how it is as a father. Well, you'll find out actually more as.
Yeah. My daughter's
older.
Two.
Yeah.
Let's
but,
not.
But wait a few years and you'll realize you're sort of this walking ATM machine for.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm just kind of glad that's going to kind of maybe come to an end.
I don't think so, dude. I don't think it's going to come to an end anytime soon.
That's what I'm hoping for. Yeah.
Oh my God. See, okay. This is one thing that I've been wanting to ask too. And I've talked to Luke about this.
Yeah.
At certain moments, as well. But like, what was it like when your daughter started dating? Was that like a big thing?
It's strange. I mean, I wasn't.
Are you
the
type of guy that's just like, whatever?
I'm pretty chill. I'm not the kind of, you know, they have the gun father person thing. I'm not
right.
about that at all. But, you know, try to get to know the kids a little bit and, you uh-huh. know, and you know, so far all the guys have been nice, respectable kids.
Well, that's good.
I mean,
yeah.
Wasn't much.
But it's not something that you're like totally worried about.
well, now I don't really have much of a choice. She's an adult, no. So I can, yeah. I just hope for the best, I guess. Yeah. What are you going to do? I said, be smart, be safe. You know, the normal things you say.
Right. Yeah. Condoms.
Yeah. I mean, I try to let her mom talk about that more. I don't know. It's weird. It's freaky.
It's weird being a dad of a girl.
If it was a boy, I'd be like, hey, son, what's up? You know, let's have a little talk here. You know, you want half my beer? All right. Yeah.
Here, take a sip of my Coors Light. Yeah, that's what my dad did for me. Yeah. But, like, I still get, like, you know, my daughter's two, and if she walks into the bathroom and I'm standing there naked ready to get into the shower, mm-hmm. like, she just stares at my underparts.
Yeah.
You know, and uh-huh. I'm just like, this makes me really uncomfortable.
Yeah, well, it's making me uncomfortable, too.
No, talking about it?
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, because I'm sitting here naked.
Yeah, right. But I was trying not to say anything, but I'm just trying not to stare, you know. That was a long time ago for me, you know, the two. And then you get to that age where you don't, you're shutting the bathroom door.
Right,
The teenagers that, you know, you're not going to walk around naked probably. Probably, maybe, depending. I don't know, some nudists or whatever. Family.
Yeah.
You know, I saw lately in
to
The Stranger,
their own.
There was an ad for a family fun bun run. Some families just stay nude all the time forever. I don't know. To me, that's weird.
That would be weird.
Yeah, it's strange.
That would be very weird.
Although it was funny, and it did, the advertisement caught my eye, and I showed it to friends, and we all laughed, and, you know. So that it was, you know, family fun bun run, you know.
Well, like I said, to each their own.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So being a music guy and playing music for many, many years.
Yeah.
Was it like a big thing for you to like get your daughter to try to play music or get her into the type of music that you're into?
Yeah, I never pushed her to be into anything I'm into. She just one day, I think it was probably 14. I asked her if she wanted a guitar or whatever, and she said, yeah, that'd be great. So we got her guitar. Uh-huh. One day, I think she was 14 or 15, just came down from her room and said, I got a song. And I was like, oh, I really wasn't aware you were even playing that thing.
Uh-huh.
And she just sat down and played this beautiful pop song. And I was just like, all right. Wow. I was blown away completely.
Because
it was a full, well-constructed song, great chorus, great hooks, everything.
Uh-huh.
And since then, she's just, you know, written when she wants to. And she's got a couple.
She play in a band or anything like that?
Not solo. No? She opened for, I opened for Star Anna recently, and then she opened for us. So it was kind of this.
Oh, cool.
The three of us at the Triple Door. And it was nice.
Yeah,
it brought tears to my eyes. She was playing the grand piano and just killing it.
Oh, that's great, dude.
That was awesome.
Was that just a total trip just to see her up
just
there on stage?
Absolutely a trip. She was killing. And then she gets off, and she doesn't, you know, she's played some small gigs around and little pubs and things like that, and cafes and things. And she gets off the Triple Door stage with the grand piano, and she's like, you know, I kind of like this better. Like she's just like, can you just get me those kinds of shows? And I'm like, no, that's really hard to get, you know?
Yeah,
it took me years to get shows
this.
And you're just
now
like,
you have to teach her how to do that by herself.
Yeah,
right?
I do. I need to
teach her the booking part.
Because she's just kind of like, can you get me something? You know, when she wants a gig, she'll be like, can you ask somebody?
Yeah. Riding her dad's coattails a little bit.
Yeah, totally, yeah. But, you know.
I've always wanted to get my daughter to like be a drummer. Like that's my goal, I think.
Oh man,
as a father.
The first few years are going to be fun because, you know,
figuring it out, it's loud.
Oh,
it's
like,
going to be terrible.
Yeah. But once she gets it, you know.
Yeah.
That'll be awesome.
That's what I'm waiting for.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just hoping that happens.
Well, it might. you never know.
See, here's a drum set. Whoa.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
That's
awesome.
You
know, that's what I'm shooting for.
A friend of mine is a really accomplished, awesome drummer. He was in a couple of bands with me before, and his son is three, Beckett, and little Beckett's playing drums now. But what he's got down best at this point is the Keith Moon, where you just play a little bit and then you kick the whole kit over. And there was a photo of him kicking it over on Facebook or something, and he's like, "Yep, my son." You know, he's got his priorities straight.
That's
he's figuring out how to kick over the kit. You know.
So where did music start for you, man?
I played it from day one.
Were your parents musical too?
No, not at all. Not really, I should say. Maybe a little bit around the edges. My grandfather played everything though, and he played accordion and violin, guitar, piano.
Do you play for the family a lot? Like
stuff, he always called me. What did he? So with him, it was just a matter of I'm a musician, but with me, it was always an entertainer. Oh, you're playing in front of people. That means you're an entertainer. And okay. I never thought. I was a songwriter. I'm like you know,
yeah,
Grandpa.
Yeah.
He's like, no, you're out playing in front of people. I'm a musician. You're an entertainer. You know, that's what he'd say. But no, so I early age when I realized I was too, you know, short and not as athletic as all the other kids at football and baseball and all that.
Right.
And, you know, dejected a little bit, but grabbed a guitar and was like, this is really easy, and played a piano and this is really easy, and then played some drums and this is pretty easy too.
Yeah.
I kind of knew that was where.
So it wasn't anything like your parents were like pushing you into.
No, actually the opposite, like, because I mean, they didn't have a whole lot of money, and I have three sisters. So growing up, we didn't have a lot of dough. And so I'd ask my dad, can you get me a guitar? And he'd be like, well, you just don't have the money, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to get a paper route and, you know, kind of save up my own money and get my own stuff.
Nice.
One piece at a time. And
working it, man.
Yeah, no, from day
from
one.
From the start.
Yeah, yeah. And it was cool because then the jocks, they ended up liking me too, because they'd be like, hey, man, teach me how to play some Metallica, man. You know, and they were on my side. I wouldn't get thrown in the garbage can or anything, you know. Yeah.
You weren't the nerdy, like, kid,
outcast. I was totally nerdy, but because I could play these, you know, terrible songs that they liked and show them or whatever, they'd be like, all right, he's cool, you know. Don't mess with him. The rest of my friends, poor kids, they got the treatment. They didn't know how to play Metallica.
Shoved
you know?
In lockers and stuff. They should have learned how to play Enter Sandman.
Yeah, exactly.
They would have been golden.
They would have been fine. Yeah.
I wish that worked for me, man.
Yeah, right.
Shit. Sounds like you had a pretty good childhood.
Yeah, you know, it had its ups and downs, but it worked out pretty well.
So where did you grow up? Around here?
Mount Vernon, Washington.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then parents split up, and so I went to high school over in Spokane last 3 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's a trip over there. It's like a little...
Yeah, what was that like, dude? I mean, you were a teenager.
Yeah. So it was kind of starting over, new friends, new people, new everything.
Yeah.
The music helped me there, too. I think that was like...
Right?
That definitely kept me... got involved right away with people playing and music.
Uh-huh.
And kind of just to... Mostly back then, it's like when you're in high school, it's like little competitions at school and things like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, still.
Do you feel like the split up with your parents like helped you like focus on your music or anything? Or
yeah, I mean, I don't know if that specifically, but it left me with a lot of time to kind of you know sit with my instrument and craft what eventually would be songwriting. At that point, I was just playing and singing and doing whatever, but. Came to Seattle right after that to be a part of the grunge thing, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Air quotes. Grunge.
Yeah. What year was that? When did you
it would have been about 91.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So.
So right in the thick of it.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah. And I got to hang with some really awesome people back then. I got to hang with the Alice in Chains guys and get to know them pretty well.
Yeah,
And met Chris Cornell and Soundgarden guys.
And
kind of hung with those people. But
I met Kim Thayil. Or how do you say his last name? Is it Thayil?
I always said Thayil, but maybe it's Thayil. I don't know.
I don't know. Anyway, he was. They would come over to Kingston all the time because Chris was from Kingston, and we would see him on the ferry boat because sometimes we'd ride the ferry boat just to play the video games.
Yeah,
because at that time you didn't have to get off the ferry. You could just stay
awesome.
On, and you could like get a free ride because it was always free on the Kingston side, and you just walk on, and then just stay on the ferry as it went back and forth, and you just play video games.
That actually sounds like kind of a fun time for a kid. You know?
Yeah, it was great, man.
Yeah,
it was
great
because they always had the best video games on there.
Oh yeah,
the Neo Geo arcade games and stuff back then, and I bummed a cigarette off of Kim Thayil once.
Did you really?
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
How old were you when you did that?
Oh God, like. Maybe 13.
Yeah. 12 and he gave
13.
It to you.
He gave it to me. Yeah. Yeah. Or
nice,
it fell out of his hand when
something.
He was like saying no. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
and then I ran into him when let's see, Obama got elected the first term.
Okay.
And I was drunk as a skunk
walking
down the
we
street
all were that night.
on Capitol Hill and this guy like walks up. And I always remember him, like, being super, super tall.
Yeah.
Because the last time I saw him, I was, you know,
13
years old. I was like, taller than him now.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
So he's not quite as tall as you thought.
Not quite as tall anymore. Yeah, maybe he's just shrinking.
Looked
just
him
like
right
my
in the
grandmother.
Eye.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, he came up. He was like, "Are you as happy as I am right now?" And I was like, yeah, I think so." and I was like, "This guy looks really familiar."
Oh,
and then he shook my hand, and then walked off into the dark. And I turned around. And I was like, "Kim," and he turned around. Yeah, and I was like, "Right on."
Oh, that's good. It's a good story. I like that story.
Yeah, I think I've told that story like 80 times.
You know, you got to hold. I've told mine too. Usually, like the grunge day stories.
Right.
Like they were a very big important part of my personal life.
Yeah. So when you moved over here, then during all that, that was the time when people were getting signed. Like people were getting signed left and right in this town.
That's
and
true.
And bands were moving here specifically for that reason because it was just shooting fish in a barrel.
It kind of was, yeah.
So, I mean, were you pretty excited around that time? How old were you? Like 19? 18.
Okay.
So you thought you were going to move over here and just be a part of it.
Oh,
that,
I thought it was just like going to be just, you know, boom.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's just going to happen overnight, you know?
What kind of music were you playing back then?
Well,
just
that
kind of the same style?
Yeah, I guess, you know, you kind of, yeah, it's kind of what people were doing.
At the time,
I decided I wasn't the greatest guitar player or whatever drummer. I thought I was a mediocre or everything. So I just singing always was easy. So so I was just a singer. I was the real long-haired singer guy that wailed. And so I ended up in this group called Mean Tangerine. We did kind of a little bit different than your normal grungy stuff. It was kind of more of a Zeppelin-y kind of had that sort of feel to it. There were a lot of bands in town at the time, kind of
almost like
that.
A fuzz metal maybe or
no,
something.
No, it didn't have a lot of metal
line?
To it. It was definitely like a throwbacky kind of it had like I guess people would because no they didn't know what to equate it with back then. They'd say like Black Crowes or something.
Oh, okay.
But
it
kind of that energy of things. And there was a lot of bands in town doing that at the time. There was Bathtub Gin and Lazy Susan and. And I guess at the
Lazy
time...
Lazy Susan, I forgot about that band.
Well, interesting enough, so Tim DiGiulio, who's in my group now, both Glassnotes and my solo project plays with me, was the lead guitar player.
Are you serious?
Yeah, so...
No
so,
way!
Yeah.
Whoa,
so,
small world.
It is, it really
That's
is.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we should have met 20 years ago, because we link up really well, but... But better late than never.
So
it was in that scene. We had really good management. The management, we had this manager, Ken Deans at the time for Mean Tangerine, who was in the Susan Silver office. He was the original manager of Mother Love Bone. So he was definitely in there with Susan Silver and with Kelly
Curtis.
Had
some connections.
Yeah.
And
we were right there. Yeah. And he also managed like Bonnie Raitt and some other bigger, like he would manage Men at Work in the U.S.
Whoa.
And stuff like this. So he was very, very connected and had a bunch of people come out to see us. But we had a few setbacks and nothing really took hold, huh? Yeah, before it really blew up, the grunge thing kind of faded out and all the labels moved out of town and we just kind of fell apart. And
So. Was that something that you like look back on with fond memories, or is it?
Oh yeah, definitely. It was some of the most fun. I mean, I was the early young kid, just having a great time hanging with really cool people. The first time that Mean Tangerine ever got radio play was because Lane Staley really liked our demo. And he was like, "I'm gonna go to KISW tomorrow, and I'm gonna make them play this because it's my birthday."
Nice.
And so he just walked in and said, "You have to play this demo. It's my birthday." And they're like, "That's Lane from Alice in Chains. We're going to play this demo, you know." So, you know, they played it.
That's pretty rad,
thanks,
man.
Thanks, Lane.
That's
you know, so we had some
crazy
fun times. No, it was really cool.
Yeah.
I don't think we were ready for record deals or anything yet at that point. We were still, I was still learning how to write a song at that point. I didn't
really. Yeah.
And probably better that we didn't, you know, off and become like, at the time when I joined the band, their roommates were Candlebox.
Oh, really?
So they were just about to move out because things were happening for them. And so they moved out. It was kind of like I was moving in, they were moving out.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they took off. But we probably just would have been something like that. And it, I don't know how
you know,
happy
okay,
I'd be with that.
Here's Candlebox, not great.
No,
like,
not
I was
great at all.
Never,
not to me.
Never
I don't
a fan of that band.
No.
And they came back and they did this like this reunion show, right? Mm-hmm. Or was it a whole tour?
It was a couple years ago. I don't know. Oh,
there.
I saw a poster. When I was postering... recently for this show, there was posters up for a new
thing. They're playing. I guess they're playing again.
Yeah.
So and maybe, I was just like, man, that's a thing, you know, that doesn't need to come back.
I don't think so, no.
Nor does Queensryche.
especially in two different versions of the band. Right?
I know, what the fuck is that all about, right?
I don't know, man, that's just
so weird. I mean, people are just trying to, I guess you got to cash in where you can, right?
Right.
Yeah, if there's that, especially, I mean, right now, there's been like a couple years where that whole nostalgia, the 90s nostalgia is coming back a little bit because we're all getting older and starting to like enter our little midlife crises,
Exactly.
you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what's happening.
Well, and some bands, it totally makes sense. I mean, I don't mind hearing Soundgarden again or Mudhoney or whatever. You know,
right.
That's
but
fine.
They're old stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you there too. Totally. Totally.
No new stuff. Yeah. No new stuff. Yeah. Don't do that. Exactly. Don't do that, guys.
Exactly.
All right. Well, hey, let's. This is a great spot to take our second musical break. We are featuring songs from Rob Benson and the Shelk off of their current new album, Cursive Falls from the Sky. And where can we find this? Where can people get it?
Well, it's at all the online outlets, the iTunes, the Amazon, shelk.bandcamp.com.
Awesome.
And then, you know, probably shows for CDs because, you know, it just seems like the real brick and mortar places are just, you know, not as easy to distribute to, and just they're, you know, far and few between.
Right, right. So. Yeah, totally.
But come out to
a
show.
Come to a show. Yeah. Come to a show. This is a million free things, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us, everybody.
You had ever did. It was non-judgmental, but the pictures filled your head. You had a million flashing moments, make the recall list, yeah.
Alright, we are back. That was A Million Free Things by Rob Benson and the Shelk. And joining me here in Dining Room Studios for the final.
Big finale.
The big finale of Dining Room Studios. Last episode that will ever be recorded here. And I'm kind of getting a little bit sentimental about
it. Are you?
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
I mean, how many episodes totally?
100. This will be 156.
That's some serious time
and
energy.
That's 3 years, yeah. People,
yep.
of episodes. Once a week. coming at you once a week from bigger, this dining room.
Bigger and better things are on your horizon.
That's right. That's so. Right. That's right.
Yes.
I hope. No, no, man. Doing this, you know, it was great. It was great. But we're not here to talk about me. I'll spend the monologue doing that. we'll talk more about Rob here. Welcome back. The new album, man, is, well, this album, the only album for Rob Benson and the Shelf, the solo project, is really good.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
It is really good. I've been listening to it a lot. I really, really like it. It reminds me a lot. You've got a very like Beatles-esque sense of musicality, I think, and structuring of songs.
Definitely.
Is that a big influence on you?
Oh, of course. I mean, that was the first thing. I mean, the first time I ever heard the Beatles when I was just a wee young lad.
Yeah.
I was literally stunned into just like silence and listening to the entire record from, start to finish.
What about They Might Be Giants? Because I hear some of that in there too.
Definitely. Definitely has been an influence in there at times. Uh-huh. For sure. This record, I think, kind of goes a little all over the place. I didn't stop myself from keeping it in one specific style. I figured my voice would maybe tie things together or something.
I really appreciate that about albums that do that.
Oh,
like,
cool.
Especially artists that do it too, because they're not afraid. It shows that you're not afraid of like venturing off the beaten path.
Or just complete failure altogether. I mean,
that could either be very good or very bad. Yeah, there's no middle ground for doing something like that. Yeah. So bravo, sir.
Thank you on making a great
album that's very eclectic and kind of all over the place with the styles.
Yeah, yeah.
So, really, really enjoy it. We were talking a little bit before we left for the break about the 90s, coming over here in the 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
And you mentioned that you met the Alice in Chains guys. Did you know Layne Staley very well then?
Yeah, well, we got to know each other pretty well.
Really?
It wasn't like he, you know, called me up to go out every Friday night or anything like that. But I was living for a while in a studio, kind of doing what they called us the NAF Rats. It was NAF Production Studios.
Okay.
And I just did whatever they needed me to do for rent and board or whatever it is.
Nice, nice.
And he was one before I was, before mm-hmm. he made it or whatever it was, made it into his full career as a musician.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what he did. So,
okay, cool.
So he would come through and go, hey, I used to do that. And, you know, we just got to know each other that way. Mm-hmm. And
nice guy.
Super, super nice guy. I mean, unfortunately, I mean... you know, got a little wrapped up in the drug thing and all that, mm-hmm. and is not with us anymore. But him and Mike, before that was all going down, were both two of the nicest guys ever. And Mike would actually come out to our shows and hang there too.
Oh, nice!
Very cool about that. But you know, the those days, yeah, they'll always be sort of a memory in the back of my head. And when I was in high school, I liked that stuff a lot. So in my head, if I would have, you know, even thought for a second that a year or two later I'd be hanging out with those guys, it would have just completely blown my mind. But as life has it, that's the way it went.
Did you know him when he started to really take a turn for the worse?
You know, he kind of did. He hung with that crowd, so I didn't know that. I didn't know that crowd. I didn't know the people that were into that stuff. Right, so I never saw him after that. It was just sort of like he faded away into his to those people. And I think that's kind of what happens sometimes. You know, they
stop
showing up. And,
totally.
Where's he at? And you hear rumors and things like that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It was sad.
Yeah.
Did
you ever get into it?
No, God, no. Stuff? The most I've ever done is just drinking and the marijuana, you know, that's about it. Yeah.
That's it.
Even quit the weed for many, many years just cause it was messing with my voice and stuff. And now, now every once in a while, but I'm not, you know, not like I used to be.
I can't do it much anymore.
Yeah,
it makes me really paranoid.
Yeah. I can't as much either. Why is it that the youngsters can do it and just be like, and then you get a little older.
Well,
and stuff.
I still have friends to this day that smoke it like every day.
Yeah. Me
like,
too.
All
me too.
The time. Like they are, that's their beer at the end of the day.
Right. Exactly.
And I can't grasp what that must be like. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. I just think, and no offense to any friends that are listening to this that do this, but you got to be in a haze. Like,
yeah, it's put you in a spot that, I mean, some people really like that space and cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I would prefer a beer at the end of the day. So
I guess beer and whiskey.
Yeah.
I'm more so the whiskey type.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's probably a little bit worse.
Well,
than smoking a little reefer at the end of the day, I would imagine.
It's hard to say. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Everybody has their poison.
Yeah,
a little something.
Yeah. Right.
So, yeah.
Still makes me just, like, sit on the couch and close the blinds.
Yeah.
So that's fine. Yeah.
Hey, that works, you know. That's awesome.
Right, right. So where did the idea for the Shelk come into being? Because this is like, let's explain the Shelk a little bit, right?
The Shelk,
it's a,
yeah.
It's a half shark, half elk.
I think I wrote the song The Shelk. I'd written down some strange poetry that made a whole lot of little sense to me or anyone else.
Yeah.
But I kind of liked how the words fell together and didn't question the meaning too much, just wrote the song. And then I'm like, wow, a Shelk. Then I have a good artist friend who I just said, hey, you know, if you were to come up with a really cool design, I would be real tempted to buy a bunch of t-shirts, and he makes t-shirts for a living. So So he was like, yeah, and he sent me back the Shelk, the first Shelk art design.
It almost looks like it could be like the Deer Hunter game or something like that. Like, that would be a great game. Like, half shark, half elk. You
got
to hunt that shit.
I would love to, to eventually make this some sort of other thing, too. In that way, you know, if Hollywood is listening and they want to give me a lot of money to make the next Shelk movie.
Well, everybody was recently talking about that, like, Sharknado on the Sci-Fi Channel, which I had no idea what the hell anybody was talking about.
I didn't know at first either. Yeah.
And I love the Sci-Fi Network because they did things like Firefly and stuff like that. Right. But this whole Sharknado thing, do you know what it is?
I saw a clip or a preview.
It's like a tornado made of sharks.
That's
right.
I think that's a bit much. I don't know if, I like to suspend my, you know, disbelief. And I like to sit in a movie and believe it can happen as much as the next guy. But a tornado of sharks, I don't know.
I'm thinking that's what it was. I mean, I saw a screen cap of something.
The water swirling and the shark, or the, I say shark because I'm partial to shark, but the sharks are, I think if really there should just be a shark quake.
If somebody from sci-fi is listening,
we got a better
you
idea.
You got to make the Shelk movie and I then think, yeah. make it into Cartoon? Like a arcade game that would
arcade
appear,
game?
Appear at bars.
It can go. It can,
that's a music
so many
video
directions.
Idea, dude. You should do that.
Which the,
Shelk video game. Somebody playing the Shelk.
That is fantastic.
Shelk Hunter
that's
or
a
something
good,
like that.
That's a really good idea.
I think you should do that.
I like that a lot.
Have you ever made... You made... Well, yeah. Of course you have. You've made a ton of like music videos.
Yeah, but they're just sort of my little, you know, scrap together Final Cut
stuff. Right, right, yeah.
I'm not, you know, I'd love to be... amazing with the motion stuff and be able to get all the crazy, you know.
The moving pictures.
Yeah, the moving pictures would be great. I'd really like that. But someday, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, there you go. $10 million idea right there, buddy.
Boom.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Trust me, you and I are going out to Denny's if that happens. it's on me all night long.
I am getting two moons over my hammies.
Yeah.
It cut the shit out of the roof of my mouth. Oh. The last time I had one of those things, it was like, it literally did that. It was like, people, listen, we've got to get away from making sandwiches with brick bread.
That's good call.
Okay,
yeah.
Like, it doesn't mean that it's an artisan sandwich if the bread is hard enough to, like, ruin your gums.
Yeah.
Right? If it's cutting you and creating, like, a very sore area in your mouth.
Yeah, not good.
It's not a good sandwich. Mm. I mean, it can take, maybe the contents can taste good, but why not? Okay. Why is that happening? What's with the solid bread?
I try to avoid it.
Yeah.
You know, as best I can. I like the softer stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
Dude. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean.
We just went to this place, like, in Fremont. Uh-huh. That's super good. It's like what do you call it? Like a charcuterie or something like that?
Could be.
You know, like a where you get buy like sliced meat and things like that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's called Dots. I'm just going to say it. It's Dots.
All right.
And they make these sandwiches and everybody's raving about their sandwiches. We go there to get a sandwich and the bread is like this baguette style bread.
Okay.
And it looks super good, but it's hard. It's
okay.
so hard.
It's soft on the inside, but hard on the outside.
Yes, exactly.
So you have a little bit of a work around the out to get to the good inside
stuff. Right,
right.
Yeah.
They should just cut the crust
it's
off.
It's not,
stuff.
Yeah, just, yeah. Just
cut
do the soft stuff.
Yeah,
do
soft
the
it
soft
up.
Stuff.
Yeah.
You don't have to go like Subway style.
No,
where
not
it's
quite
just
that.
Shitty bread.
No.
You can use good bread.
Right.
It just doesn't have to be as hard as cement.
Well, this is the next $10 million idea, I think. It's
right.
just good
we
sandwiches,
We are covering
good bread.
A lot of ground here, and we're fixing things in America.
Somebody's going to make a lot of money off of this episode. Just by their own, you know, future endeavors.
That is for sure. That is for sure. So we exit the 90s.
Yeah,
in your life.
Yeah, and so then it was.
Were you kind of down when things didn't happen?
Well, I tell you, I did take a couple years off because that's when I had my little daughter enter my life.
Oh, okay.
I took a few years to kind of. You know, the first couple of years, you got to be really there. I mean, that's just, I think, a very important time. I still played at home and that's when I really started concentrating on songwriting, you know, really? Learning how to write a song.
Did you ever take lessons or anything like that?
No, I think it was in me the whole time. I just didn't, I always, as a singer, I let the guitar player kind of write all the parts.
Right.
And was always frustrated when the chorus didn't feel quite like a chorus. And I'd think in my head, I think I would do it differently, but I never actually did anything about it other than just, okay, I'll sing my part here. Then when I started sitting down with a guitar and writing my parts out, I was like, wow, this is a lot easier to construct hooks and to create choruses and, you know, verse and a chorus. And so then it kind of made sense and put a band together called Nevada Bachelors. And we pretty much right away I wouldn't say right away, maybe it took a year or so, but it hit really quick. It happened really quickly. We got signed to Pop Llama Records. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah, later. Yeah, totally. Totally.
Man, I wish they would do their 25-year deal, because they aren't together anymore, Pop Llama, but maybe it'd be 30 years for them. They might have started earlier, because they started with the Young Fresh Fellows maybe a few years before
Sub
Pop.
That's right.
And they had the Presidents of the United States of America and the Posies and the Fastbacks and Young Fresh Fellows and the Dharma Bums. Yeah. A lot of really cool bands from the, you know.
Dharma
the,
Bums.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
It was like a 90s thing too, but it was more like later 90s.
Well, it sounds really familiar. And I know that, you know, the book and the Jack Kerouac book, but
Portland group.
Well, were they in Portland?
Yeah, but I mean, they played here quite a bit. They're a great, great group. And it was kind of when the indie thing was starting to happen.
Right.
We started
playing.
There was a very cool community thing that was happening at that point. Like, we were playing with, you know, Death Cab for Cutie a lot and Western State Hurricanes, which
John Roderick's
old Long
band,
Winters,
yeah.
right? So we were playing, and that was kind of the groups in Peter Parker and these groups that were just, you know, kind of just leaving. It wasn't the grunge thing anymore. It was a new style, a new feel. We were still kind of doing a lot of power pop kind of stuff, but you know, sort of fit into it pretty well. And
right.
And just had a really great time with that. And kind of, that's where I got my first, you know, releases.
Were you doing a lot of touring? Because Pop Llama was, like you were saying, it was pretty big, man. They had some big acts on there.
The funny thing with that is the one major tour that we had was going to be with the Posies. We all quit our jobs. We had to gave them our 2 weeks notice.
Oh, God.
Going to go out with the Posies for a five-week U.S. tour. And John and Ken got in a big fight on the plane back from Europe and broke up the band and quit and completely canceled the tour. So we had to go back and beg for our jobs back.
No.
I love
God,
the Posies. I'm wearing
worst.
Their shirt
I know
right
you
now.
Wear the
I
shirt.
Love, I love them. So no disrespect to them. They have helped in a million different ways otherwise.
Oh,
so,
holy shit.
So, but that was a tough one. We had to, we got to go back and get our jobs back and
oh,
do
my
all
God.
That. And then that band, I think that might have been sort of the beginning of the end, because in a weird way, that band kind of just, the guitar player Mike got picked up by Harvey Danger.
Oh, okay.
So we were playing with them a lot too, and then he joined them with John Roderick, was doing keyboards with them at the time.
Uh-huh,
and so they were on salary on that group and kind of touring a lot with them.
Yeah.
And so the band just didn't have a lot of time to play. We had Jason Finn in our band, who was the President's drummer.
Oh, yeah.
And they were on a break, but then they were getting back together, so then
right.
we were starting to be back burner again.
Yeah, we had Chris Ballou
Chris is awesome.
Here a little while ago, and he was talking about that whole thing and stuff, yeah.
And they had Subset for a while.
Yeah, Subset. They came over and played. I went to college over in Ellensburg, and they
nice.
And played this little music festival called Gust Fest that they started.
Was that
over there.
In like the rodeo area?
Yeah.
Okay, because we did that 1 year with Alien Crime Syndicate, and then who's?
Were you in Alien Crime Syndicate?
No.
Oh, okay.
I was in Nevada Bachelors, but we opened for them. Who opened for?
Okay.
Who was the headliner that year? It was the guy that does the K Records, the Calvin.
Oh, Calvin Johnson.
Yeah,
he was playing.
Yeah, he.
That
was
may
the,
have been
the
after my time, because I think they started Gust Fest like maybe 2 years before I left.
Yeah, yeah.
So it might have been, because I don't remember. I don't remember. Was it Beat Happening that played, or was it was just straight up Calvin Johnson?
It might have been his own band. It might have been Beat Happening, though. I'm failing to remember the exact lineup, but he was involved.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Because I also remember, like, Pedro the Lion played 1 year and stuff.
Yeah, we got to play with them a few times, too. Awesome band.
Yeah.
Great
band.
Oh,
dude, Bazan is wonderful.
You know, it was such a trip the other day. We after 13 years, the Bachelors, Nevada Bachelors, had our one reunion show. Uh-huh. Our bass player lives in Boise, so it's really tough for us to ever. Yeah, yeah. And Jason's the president, and Mike now is in the band Loaded. So
Duff
McKagan. So they're always gone and doing stuff.
Yeah.
Finally had a day where we were all in town for 1 week. So we're like, all right, 1 week, we have to do 3 or 4 rehearsals to remember these songs.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
Just played a little cafe, our buddy's cafe.
Uh-huh.
And it was awesome. There was like no notice, hardly told anyone, and there was like, you know, 100 and some people there hanging out.
Oh, nice.
But Dave Bazan was there, and you know, came up afterwards, and I'm like, oh my God, you're Dave Bazan. You know,
yeah, yeah.
He's like, man, I really love your stuff. And I had no idea. You know, it's been all these years since we played with Pedro. So,
yeah, yeah.
So that
yeah.
was a pretty huge, huge thing.
That's fantastic. Yeah. He's such a nice guy.
Oh, he's
too.
Super nice, and his music is just top notch, top shelf stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
So, so that kind of all falls through. I mean, that kind of must have been dark. A dark time.
You know what?
Right?
At that point, I think because that
you're
was the
just
first
too
time...
positive, man. Well, I'm trying to make this. I'm trying to get serious here.
The dark parts
I'm trying to get into some dark parts in your
stages.
Life. You didn't do any drugs.
No.
You
didn't... No, but you know what?
I'm feeling cheated here, Rob.
I have had my dark stuff for sure. No, I mean just that, you know, look, that period of my life I couldn't be dark. That's the first time in my life where I got to the point in a band where no matter where we showed up, there was a couple hundred people up to maybe 500 people showing up to see our band every night. So you can't get down about that.
That's pretty rad.
My ego was telling me, you know, I'm just gonna take this thing and whatever next project I do, and it's gonna be awesome. And so I didn't have any real. Although the first few times I played solo after that, and 10 people showed up, I was like, "What the hell is going on? Where are my people? Where are all my followers?" You know, they were nowhere to be seen. So
right.
Except for like 10, and ten of you. Yeah. Oh, God, love you.
Yeah. So do you kind of take? I mean, you take. It sounds like you take all this kind of stuff in stride. You're pretty good about, you know.
Well. After that group, the next group did pretty well too. We were in this band, Dear John Letters, and that did really, really well. But from that period on, after Dear John Letters, it's been a lot of groups that just smaller community groups, local things. Yeah, you know, you can't get too down on it. You got to just do what you can. But so since then, the struggle's been trying to get something back up into that sort of size of a group would be a lot of fun again.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
how did Dear John Letters come about?
So the next group, that was kind of a trip too.
This was after Nevada Bachelors.
After Nevada Bachelors, this was about 2000. I was dating this girl who had some pretty cool poetry. Really, I think it was just stuff that she'd been writing for years about in her journal or whatever. And I somehow convinced her to let me turn it into songs and make some stuff. And her whole thing was like, that's cool, but I want to name the band Dear John Letters. And I'm like, sounds great to me. You know,
yeah, that was a great
cool
band.
Yeah.
Cause I remember hearing about you guys a lot. I don't know if I ever actually heard you.
Well, I'll have to get you some material. We
that
did
would
three
be great.
Records and it was really fun.
Great.
And it was, you know, I got my friend Johnny Sangster involved, and he was into being a part of it.
Yeah,
and Richard Davidson was the bass player. And Richard also played in, Radio Nationals. I don't know if you know that group at all, but they were kind of hitting pretty hard for a while there. And got picked up by a small little local record label called Rome Records. Cassidy Layton was on drums. And so we did three records. And the first record we did, KXP just went nuts on it. And
really?
It was of 2001, it was the 12th record on the top 90.3 of the entire everything that they played that year.
No kidding.
So we did
that's
pretty,
huge.
Pretty well. That was the best I've ever.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that and the Dear John Letters records were the
right.
best. Cause we got signed to a label out of LA and did some more stuff and ended up on CMJ up like to about 34 on the charts.
Did you go and do the whole like South by Southwest kind of stuff?
Well, South by was still just on par with North by at the time. So we did North by Northwest because North by was still kind of happening. North by doesn't even exist anymore.
It doesn't even exist, yeah.
But South by took off and just became the big thing. So this is also the tricky thing about all this is before iTunes. This is before, you know, digital stuff. So
and North by and South by were basically, like South by Southwest has turned into like
a massive thing
for everybody.
Yes,
but
absolutely.
It's still extremely expensive. But like what it used to be and what it started out as, which a lot of people don't know, is that it was totally an industry thing.
It is, yeah.
And it was supposed to be for, you know, just industry people to come and check out new bands that
absolutely.
Hadn't been signed yet.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And so then they did it in Portland then. It was the North by Northwest, which was awesome.
Yeah.
And I really wish they would have kept it going, because I think it could be as big or something, you know.
Well, didn't it kind of morph into something else? Wasn't it?
It's like a pop festival there.
Yeah, yeah. Some... What is it? What is that festival called? I can't even remember.
Is it the Portland Pop Festival? I don't know. Maybe not. It could be something else. But
I think it's called something else. I think it kind of morphed into that.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, we were doing stuff. We definitely, you know, that band was about is about the top of the
yeah. Did you do a lot of touring too? And
well, that's another very strange, the touring thing for me. It's like, what's that new movie that, or not movie, but television show where there's like a dome over the city? In a weird way,
oh, I saw a preview for that.
Weird way, my musical life has been this sort of like dome around the West Coast for me. I don't know what has happened. I can't seem to get out, because we had everything rolling. You want to hear a dark story? This is the darkest one. This is really sad.
Let's
get really sad. Okay, no, this is totally sad. I didn't even. None of us knew what to do.
Yeah, yeah.
We got this booking agent, and she was awesome. She was amazing. She was booking us these great shows. Uh-huh. We were so stoked, playing with all these good artists.
This is in Dear John Letters.
And she's going to book the tour. We're at 34 on the CMJ charts. We're being played on over 200 stations nationwide.
Oh, that's
and just fantastic. Killing it. And she's going to book us the tour. She's got it all handled. She's a really great agent. She's on the road with her band that she is managing full-time, but she's just booking us. They're called The Exploding Hearts. Have you heard of this band before?
Yes.
So you probably know where this story is going, perhaps, possibly?
I think I do, yeah.
Yeah, so she's on the road with them in San Francisco the last day of their tour. They just had an amazing national tour. They're driving home, and the van rolls, and three of the members were killed, and she and another member were in the hospital for months.
Oh, my God.
So we're, you know, in the midst of having this tour being booked, and yet we have no idea where she sent the stuff, who, you know, how to follow up, how to... And you don't exactly show up at a hospital bed with a bunch of roses.
Was she in a coma or something?
She was just broken from part to part all the way up and down. Broken probably in her heart, too, because, I mean, these are her best buddies, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so we're just like, what do we do? In a weird way, that might have been the beginning of the end for Dear John Letters, because it just kind of took the wind out of our sails.
Yeah,
you don't really know what to do at that point. You're just sort of like... Well, I guess we just keep playing the Northwest, and you know, what do you do? You know,
yeah.
And she finally got a hold of us when she got out of the hospital and said, "Hey guys, I'm really sorry, but what are you going to say to that? No, we're sorry." And she said, "I'm not going to do this anymore. I don't want to book anything more. I don't want to be part of the music business anymore." Yeah. And that was it. And
you keep in touch with her at all? Have you heard anything from her?
She kind of faded away into.
Into
some
the
other stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
I was really in close touch with her then boyfriend was in a band, and then they split up too, and so I'm still in touch with him, but I don't know what happened to her. Yeah. I have no idea.
Oh, man, that's terrible.
Really sad. I know she's better now. She healed, but
yeah.
Do you ever heal from something like that? I don't know.
Jesus.
So that's the dark. Maybe that's the darkest thing I could bring up.
And it happened to somebody else.
Yeah, well, you know, it's still tough. Yeah,
yeah.
But and then I mean, at the time, Johnny Sangster in our band was really trying to decide in his heart and mind whether he wanted to be a producer full time or a musician full time. And I think he decided at that point producing because was getting all the great local acts. If you don't know any of his stuff, he's an amazing producer.
He has a great
tons of stuff.
Great
so,
producer.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
So he went that direction, and so the band just kind of fell apart. And
It seems like every time you guys are about to go on tour, the band breaks
that's
up.
That's why I brought up the dome thing, because it's just like this dome. I feel like maybe it was, you know, partially life just saying, stick to your family and your kids for a little bit. You'll get your time. Because, you know, third time's a charm. I'm still waiting. You know?
Right.
Next one, I'm going. I am going.
Do you think this one will break you out of the Northwest?
I hope so. I mean, I know we're doing the West Coast. Me and Timmy are going to go down the West Coast in August.
Yeah. And you're just doing a two
just
dudes?
As the duo. We got kind of smaller cafe-ish kind of venues. Actually, the place we're playing in L.A. is awesome. It's called the Hotel Cafe, which is
a really
cool space, especially for kind of the way we're doing kind of the acoustic electric version of the songs. So they're a little
Did you ever play the Hotel Cafe, or was it the OK Hotel?
That was home base. That and the old Crocodile was home base.
Yeah.
Those two.
A Dead Milkman used to play at the OK Hotel so many
so much.
Loved it.
And
loved
I never it. Made it to a show there.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I always wanted to.
One of my favorite shows there ever was Death Cab for Cutie, Western State Hurricanes, and Nevada Bachelors. We absolutely sold it out way beyond what we were supposed to even have in there, and they just kept packing people in there.
Oh, that's like, rad. That's so
and,
rad.
And they were,
was it a big space? I can't remember ever seeing any pictures of it.
Probably a couple hundred people would be almost too much.
Really?
Maybe more, but but it had this sort of overspill area into the other bar area, so you could kind of get a lot more people than that in there. But to get them all into the room was where it got dangerous, probably, because it was file them back in. Do you remember the sit and spin at all?
Up on Shoreline?
Oh, no. The sit and spin was downtown by a block or two away from Crocodile.
Oh, okay.
No, it had the same sort of thing. I never went there. It had a spill out area that you could go back into the club area, mm-hmm. and then but they had a kind of a spill out area into the cafe to where you could pack more people in than probably you should.
Right.
Because there's other areas for them to go. Yeah. But, both great clubs. Sit and spin was one of my favorites as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you could do your laundry there.
Yeah, you could. Yeah. You actually, they had a side laundry thing. It was awesome. Yeah. So good.
That's fantastic, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I always went to, when I was younger, we always went to, because I was from the Kitsap Peninsula.
Oh, okay.
So
we
would come over in groups and stuff and go watch Built to Spill play at Rock Candy.
So cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And the Delusions would always open up for them, mm-hmm. you know, and it was great.
So the Rock Candy, that was just probably right after they were Tree People, and then or Doug Marsh was in Tree People, and then he went into Built to
Spill. Yeah, it was pretty close. I mean, I'm only 33. So
Rock Candy closed at some point. I'm trying to remember what year.
Rock Candy closed in I think 90, or wait, maybe it was 2000, 2001.
Oh, was it really? Okay. Yeah.
Something like that. It was dirty, man. It was gross.
It reminded me of the Kingdome. Inside there, like a miniature kingdom, because it was just all concrete and just
It was all concrete, wasn't it? It was slab on grade down on the floor and stuff. But it was so disgusting. Always said their plumbing was never working.
No,
and somebody was always clogging the toilets in there, and mm-hmm. it just smelled the whole place just smelled like toilet. It was disgusting.
Man, I had some good shows there though, even though it was disgusting.
Oh, really? You play there?
I played there with
that was a great. It was a great spot. It was always packed.
Yeah,
always.
Yeah. Yeah, people just from, because they would do this sort of split all ages. Maybe sometimes they'd make the all ages go upstairs or something.
Right.
And then
down
below be 21. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we did a show there like that with,
and even watching it from upstairs was a great vantage point too.
Oh, it was.
We would always try to get a vantage point from upstairs.
No, you're totally right. It was a good space all the way through. We played there with Dandy Warhols and Super Deluxe.
You played with Dandy Warhols.
Yeah,
huh?
That was awesome. It was really
what did
fun
you think time. Of those guys? Did you get to talk with them much?
Not too
then?
Much. They were pretty cool. They were pretty we're off in this area over here. We're going to rope it up. You know, they were pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. That guy Taylor seems like such a dick.
Yeah, they were pretty into their whole deal.
Right,
you know? Yeah. But it was cool to get to
Dig?
Play with them.
Have What's you that? Seen Dig?
No.
The movie? The documentary
about
them?
Oh, I've heard
about
this. Did they get in fights and
Brian
stuff?
Brian Jonestown
like,
Massacre?
Do they, like...
Oh, God, yeah.
Just, it gets to be this just messy
it's
thing.
Yeah. It's pretty good, though.
Are they both still touring and playing, both those bands? Or?
I think Dandy Warhols are touring again, I think they're doing it again.
I can't think of the girl's name, but it was always about... she would always jump up there and... not be wearing much of anything. So
right. She'd always take her shirt off.
Oh,
yeah. Boobs.
Sweet. Woohoo.
Boobs. Yeah. Totally.
It was a good time.
Yeah. Seattle was an interesting place to be back in the late 90s, early aughts.
Yes.
Yeah. I have a lot of fond memories of going to the Rock Candy. But everybody, one person would get sick in our party each time we went.
Yeah.
And one time it was me. And when you're filing out of a place like that with a bunch of other sweaty teenagers, you need to get outside quickly.
Yes.
And
plan.
It does not happen fast there. Because I think they only had one door. It wasn't even double doors there.
Yeah.
For the exit.
It was. It was just the single in front. And then they had a back door, but they didn't want you going out
yeah,
that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was like towards the green room and stuff. Yep. And you couldn't go that way. Oh, God, that was terrible. so horrible. So what's coming up, man? What's the deal with this new album, and what are you gonna?
Well,
I guess you're going down the West Coast
tour. So we're starting August 7th. We're gonna be playing in Portland, at the Ash Street Saloon. August 8th, we're in Eugene at the Sam Bond's Garage. The 9th, that's gonna be a long day. We're going down to Oakland. Driving all the way from Eugene to Oakland one day, playing that night in at the Awaken Cafe in Oakland, and then the 10th we are at the Hotel Cafe in Los Angeles.
Awesome.
And then we drive back and get here just in time to play the Tractor on the following Wednesday, the 14th.
Okay.
So we're opening for some a friend of mine that hasn't been in town for quite a while. He's in L.A. now, but Rafe Perlman, solo songwriter guy, but okay. He has a full band that plays with him. He's really chill, nice, kind of nice. Just really a groovy, chill kind of songwriter.
Excellent.
And he asked us to be a part of that.
Yeah. You're going to play full band that one?
I think that's probably just me and Tim because we're going to be doing the Tim.
Okay.
And his band is really chill anyways.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Just the two of us.
You don't want to show him up.
Well, you know, he's going to probably have a full band. But even with the full band, he's really kind of a little mellow. Uh-huh. And it's just like groovy kind
of. Low-key stuff.
So we'll do that as a duo. And then after
that,
we have, you know, we both play in the Glass Notes as well. So we'll be doing
Glass
Notes stuff coming up. And then Tim and I are going to Germany in September. We're doing a private event. That's how we're getting there. We're doing a private event for a close friend. And after that, we're doing a couple little pub type shows.
Oh, cool.
Over
in Europe.
Yeah.
Have you ever played in Europe before?
Yeah, I played there in Paris. I played a show, my friend in the Posies, Ken Stringfellow.
Uh-huh.
The Posies, by the way, even though no, I love Ken Stringfellow. He's awesome. John, too. John's awesome. But Ken got me a show. On my honeymoon, my wife and I were heading to Paris, and then we're going all over France.
Yeah.
And I just sort of...
And you played a show on your honeymoon?
I did, yeah.
Dude.
Yeah, no.
What did your wife think about that?
She loved it.
Really?
Well, she's the biggest fan of my music of anybody on earth.
That's great.
So,
that's
yeah,
great.
If there's, yeah, that's one thing that she was very, very happy about. No, we played... I got a hold of Ken Stringfellow, and he lives there now. I guess that's
cool.
His home base.
Nice.
And he was producing a band called Cheap Star. And they heard my stuff and they said, yeah, come on over. And, you know, you can even play our gear, whatever instrument.
Oh,
whatever.
Nice.
So I just played solo in this little place called the Pop-In, and it was just awesome. It was like 100, you know, sweaty, French people having a good time. And it was funny cause I started out trying to speak a little French and I don't speak anything. I mean, a restaurant French, you know, where's the bathroom? That's kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And people were just looking at me like, who is this? What is this guy doing? And the first couple songs, it just wasn't working. And I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm really sorry. I don't speak very good French. My name is Rob. I'm from Seattle. And from that point, everybody kind of perked up and everybody came right up to the front of the stage. At first, I think they probably thought I was just like, you know, from the UK or something.
Right.
Kinda,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Came over and big deal, whatever. But when I said Seattle, everybody got all excited. And then people were just so into it the whole show. And it was just awesome. So
that's rad.
It was really cool.
That's rad.
Yeah.
Well, make sure to tell the Germans that you're from Seattle.
That's the first thing I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, Seattle.
Not making that mistake twice.
Yeah, no. Not going to do that one because my German's worse than my French. So.
Well, that's awesome, Rob. So where can we find you on the web? Let's pimp your wares again.
You can find my solo site at www.robbenson.com. Now, there's two B's on the Rob, so there's three B's in the middle.
Gotcha.
Does that get confusing? Probably.
Yeah, as much as Air-Raid does.
Yeah, exactly, right? Otherwise, if you want to go check out the record and stream it, you can go shelk.bandcamp.com.
Cool.
And, you know, I'm out there. If you put my name into the Google, me up.
Out there. We'll find you. Two B's in Rob, guys.
Two B's.
All right. Well, hey, thank you so much for coming, man. I really appreciate you stopping by and being the last and final guest in the Dining Room Studios.
I won't forget it, you know.
I won't either.
Yeah.
I won't either, my friend. Okay, we're going to go out today with the title track of the album, Cursiv Falls from the Sky. It's a really great song, and I hope you guys enjoy it. We'll be back next week with more The Air Raid Podcast for your ears with special guest... One of the two. I haven't decided which one we're going to do. Aisha Tyler or Brian Posehn. Brian Posehn. So either Aisha Tyler or Brian Posehn will be here next week with me. So we'll see you then. Shall we? That sounds good. Visit us at air-raid.net. Rate and review in iTunes helps us out, helps us continue to get great guests like Rob Benson on the show. So please do that. It'll only take you a couple seconds, guys. So just do it, will ya? All right. This is Cursiv Falls from the Sky from the album of the same name by Rob Benson and the Shelk. Have a great week, everybody.
Can't decide where I wanna be. Peace on play, one table for two. Lost in the drink that I took for you. Talk about whisper and the water on the face. Cause it falls from the sky and the black mold of grace. Tangled words like a rope with no anchor. Tangled words like a rope with no anchor.
shadows on the ground, buds in the tree. Can't decide where I wanna be. Peace on a plate, one table for two, lost in.